You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, July 8th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Joining us today, Murray Terry from evilspacecat.com.
Hello, Internet.
And I'm Thomas Rivor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And here's the news. Our top story today is that the nominations for the Harvey Awards have come out. And they do have their webcomic section. I want to go ahead and give a shout-out to those who have been nominated, such as Battle Pug from Mike Norton, Bucko from Erica Moan and Jeff Parker, Delilah Durkin, the Turkish Lieutenant from Tony Cliff, Gronk from Katie Cook, and from our friend Kate Beaton, Hark a Vagrant has also been nominated. You can find these out and the other nominees over at robot6.comicbookresources.com. And over in our Buzz section, over at our friends at boingboing.net, an article from Cory Doctorow about the Declaration of Internet Freedom. Yes, there is a short-to-point manifesto for a free and open Internet with such ideas as transparent and participatory processes for making the Internet policy and the establishment of the five basic principles, which is expression, access, openness, innovation, and privacy. Very interesting stuff. Go and take a look at over at boingboing.net. Also, after the nomination of Mike Norton for Battle Pug, we have a little bit of an interview with him over at comicalliance.com talking about making the jump from web to print. One of those stories that should be read for those who do wish to grow up, air quotes here, grow up, and make the transition from web comics to the print comics when so many others are going the other way around. And now let's go and take a look at what's happening over in the business section with Marie.
Thanks, Tom. We got four series today. Is it four or three? Four. In the business section today. The first story comes to us from robot6.comicbookresources.com from thewholestory.com. Basically, what's going on there is the creator Ryan Estrada has created this new digital comic site. And there's some speculation that it could change the way that digital comics are sold. It's basically delivering DRM-free, downloadable comics at a reasonable price. And the starter bundle is been very reasonably priced at pay what you want with a $1 minimum. And the rest are sold in bundles that you can, just with various extras thrown in, that you can buy. If you want to check it out on the-whole-story.com, and all the information is there. Our second story is more about Kickstarter, coming to us from comicstribe.com, which basically overlines 10 good points about Kickstarter and is probably pretty good reading if you're considering doing one of your own Kickstarters. It's very, very interesting. Highly suggest you read it. The link's in the show notes. Our third story is a article coming to us from bleedingcool.com. Is an interview with Chris Weston on the future of webcomics. Chris Weston, having done work such as the Ministry of Space and The Filth. It's a very interesting article. He talks about working in the industry, about comics industry versus movies, and about some of his own super secret projects. If you're interested, go check it out. Our last article is about another relaunch, DC's 52 relaunched. Now Marvel is doing it, and it is called Marvel Now. If you are interested in finding out the gritty details, it details them in this article from bleedingcool.com. And more or less in a nutshell, it looks like they're pretty much doing something similar. They've redesigned character, redesigned the look. And like the other one, which was launched in a very short period of time, they're going to stretch it out over a much longer period, and they're not going to reboot the continuity, unlike DC. So if you want the skinny on the Marvel Now reboot, go check out the link in the show notes. And now on to back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marie. Over in our education, we've got a story coming at us from the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, that's CBLDF.org, talking about the history of censorship, coming to us from Joe Sergey. Most people think of talking about comic book censorship. Most people think about comic book censorship coming back to from Dr. Frederick Wortham and the whole Seduction of the Innocent. But it actually started off a lot earlier, back with The Yellow Kid, back in the late 1800s, what was considered one of the first comic books. And it talks about how society reacted to The Yellow Kid. In fact, the phrase yellow journalism was actually derived from a phrase called yellow kid journalism. And it's one of those things, a great look back at not only the founding of comic books, but also at the way that it reacted and how society reacted and the impact that it had towards the history that we have nowadays. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. News and our discussion panel right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at WebcastBeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's Sunday, July 8th, early in the morning, as you can tell, folks. But let's go ahead and take a look at what's happening in the tech division. We've got a story coming to us from ArsTechnia.com talking about how Verizon is stating that net neutrality violates their free speech rights. That's right. Verizon pressed its argument against the Federal Communications Commission's new network neutrality rules on Monday, filing a brief stating that it exceeded the agency's regulatory authority, but also violated network owners' constitutional rights. Verizon believes that the FCC is threatening the First Amendment right to freedom of speech and its property rights under the Fifth Amendment as well. Verizon believes that Congress has not only given the FCC the power to impose network neutrality regulations on the nation's ISP, but last year the firm sued to stop the implementation of the rules that the FCC adopted in December 2010. We also have a little bit more about net neutrality, about how Kakao Talk fights the net neutrality fight in Korea. From an article over at our friends at GigaOM.com, we get a lot of news from GigaOM, thank you very much, talking about how ISP Kakao Talk, which now boasts 52 million users worldwide, launched in 2010 and is having to struggle with the regulations over in South Korea with the whole net neutrality situation. And with that, let's go ahead and run back over to Marie. Marie, what's happening over in our tidbit section today?
There's only one massive tidbit today, and it is no surprise that Charles Carrion is still drama city over here. I mean, we followed this guy through the stranger and stranger and stranger lawsuit that he was filing. And then now, according to PopeHat.com, he's dropped his suit against the extraordinary growing list that he had been conglomerating for to sue against. He has now dismissed it without prejudice, which means that he could file it refile it at any point in time, should he want to. But it doesn't seem that this particular action could stop Inman from going against him if he wanted to seek lawyer fees and damages. And apparently he is also claiming that because he has walked away, he has achieved some form of victory. He has also, in addition to walking away from the Inman suit, he is still, he's walked away from the other suit against the fellow who was doing the satirical site against him. It's a long article that is coming to us from popehat.com. And it seems that the fellow got a very good lawyer, Paul Allen Levy, a public citizen, and who knows his stuff really well, who has responded to Mr. Carrion, and oh my God, just, you gotta go read it to believe it. That is just, like, and not even believe it. You just gotta read it, because, wow. Like, there's one of those situations where it is just a stranger than life kind of thing. It's like, wow, this is just weirder than any soap opera plot ever conceived. So go ahead and check it out on popehat.com. Links in the show notes. And, of course, we could see him back at any time. Dun, dun, dun! And that's all in the tidbits today. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marie. Yeah, the situation with Carrion just seems to get stranger and stranger.
One of those situations where reality is just stranger than, or reality is stranger than fiction. It just really is.
I can't help but wonder if Jack Thompson, the famed of the video game lawsuits, is sitting back saying, man, that guy is weird. And speaking of weird things, let's take a quick look at our oddities as well. Over at robot6.comicbookresources.com. They have more news from Rob Pratt. Rob Pratt was someone who last year created this amazing Superman classic animation, a small animation short done in a Fleischer-ish style, the original Superman cartoon. Well, he's back with Bizarro Classic, featuring John Newton, once again, who starred as Superboy back in the live-action TV series back in the 90s, and he's back doing the voice of Superman. And it's just one of those things that shows what happens when fan talents put their work out on the net. So much better than what we've seen from some of the traditional studios. But we also have a story over from TheEscapistMagazine.com talking about how fans of MS Paint have created a fake anime. That's right. It seems that our friends over at MS Paint have created a new installment called Homestuck, which is second only to fans of Japanese shooter series Tohu Project as the craziest and most dedicated fandom on the internet. Well, when the series creator Andrew Hussey announced that he'd be taking a temporary hiatus, fans erupted with a flurry of creation, and they've created their own anime based off the series. Now, they say that this is a bit of a misnomer. They haven't really created anything outside of a few animated GIFs, but what they have created is a whole environment in where this is a real thing. They say that no such thing, no such Homestuck anime exists, but the screenshots have appropriate subtitles, the style and character expression look authentic, and even the settled watermarks of the various Japanese TV networks or the YouTube user interface have made it look real. So again, go ahead and take a look at that over at TheEscapistMagazine.com, and we'll have more links to this in our show notes, which you can find over at our site. And at this point, I think we're going to go ahead and take our second break, and we'll be back with our discussion portion of the program right after this.
Do you enjoy digitally composed and or remixed music? Love a variety of musical styles? Look no further than LapFoxTracks.com. Over a dozen different composers with individual stylings.
I'll do my work in this biosphere. I'll give you everything with my super ears. Only feel the way that I'm progressing. Don't take the time, that's not to give a damn.
Well, affordable, high-quality musical tracks with much more bass than what is technically possible for this podcast promo. Check out LapFoxTracks.com.
Welcome back to episode 74 of the webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's time for our discussion panel.
Yay!
Yay!
Joining us today, again from evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
And our guest newscaster today is the creator, writer, and artist of the City of Reality at cityofreality.com, as well as the new artist for the long-running webcomic The Watch at thewatch.com, Ian Sampson.
Hello, it's great to be here.
The first story we're going to discuss today is the Declaration of Internet Freedom. Anyone comes up with something that's going to be revolutionary for freedoms for people on the internet, I tend to take a bit of a skew look at it. But they actually have some interesting things they have for this. I mean, it's a short, sweet, and well-defined. The Declaration of Internet Freedom, as stated in the newscast earlier, basically sets on five basic principles. Expression, which says don't censor the internet. Access, promote universal access to fast and affordable networks. Openness, keep the internet an open network where everyone is free to connect, communicate, write, read, watch, speak, listen, learn, create, and innovate. Innovation, protect the freedom to innovate and create without permission. Don't block new technologies and don't punish innovators for their users' actions. And privacy, protect privacy and defend everyone's ability to control how their data and devices are used. Now, I mean, these sound great, but I think these are a little more pie-in-the-sky type of things. Some of them just, and they don't even seem to have a little bit of a basis in what's real as opposed to what they would like.
It's very sort of, there's, in some ways, it's very vague, and that I guess is like, it seems really simple on the surface, but, you could say, yeah, that's like, totally, I can see that very much, and then you kind of think about it as like, wait a second. And there's the like, oh, this could be a little more complicated than I thought. It's idealistic, you know. Well, all the best intentions, I'm sure, but there's definitely some more complication here if you're kind of looking below the underneath here.
Right. And let's take a look at some of them in individual. I mean, they say expression, don't censor the internet. Okay, are they talking censorship in general? Are they talking about from the governments? I know that with the forums that I run, I have to censor it at times because we've got people who come in who have kids, and they don't want the kids to see this stuff. And we tend to cater a lot towards them. And there are so many trolls and flame wars and just out-and-out idiots out there that there has to be some sort of censorship. And I don't want to say censorship, but responsibility on the part of the people who run these forums.
Well, it's not just that. Like, I mean, for example, like there are different services that have different levels of I don't know how to put it. It's like they have different levels of requirement for the people who are using their service in terms of the content they provide. I mean, the most offender that I can think of right now is PayPal. And it's like, if you want to use PayPal to accept money on your website, you better not have anything that is remotely at all lewd on there, because they can start throwing their hands around obscenity and take all your money.
I swear that was a hard-boiled egg, not a nipple.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like it could be, well, even like showing like a profile or a silhouette that, you know, that maybe not, you know, you could easily put it on TV, like in the sense of like it's somebody's back, you know, they can get their noses out of joint about, you know. So it's just like you have to self-censor if you want to use their service. And I mean, it's not anybody saying, you know, you have to do it, but if you want to, realistically, if you want to do business with like one of the largest, you know, it's like doing business with Visa, you know, everybody has a Visa comparison with, you know, the small percentage of people that have MasterCard comparatively. And it's like, well, you got to take Visa. So you got to take PayPal if you want to get that donation or whatever, or be able to sell a wallpaper or your book or whatever. And if they decide it's obscene, then they're going to literally take all your money that you have in the account. And, you know, you'll probably either have a lot of pain to get it back or you'll never get it back. So you're going to have to censor something.
I do wonder if who's the actual intended audience of the declaration? Is it meant for just everyone who's running on the internet, or is it like for the government? Because it's kind of a different thing between whether the government is censoring the internet in their specific ways, or if each individual company or individual is doing it themselves for their own purposes.
Exactly. And they,
that's true.
They seem to want to claim this worldwide. And I'm sorry, the censorship laws for the internet are vastly different depending upon where in the world you are. I mean, you're not going to get the same censorship laws or freedom of, from censorship that you have here in the U.S. Or the U.K. or Canada, as opposed to more totalitarian regimes like North Korea and Vietnam, China, which have heavy-handed censorship, or religious things like the Middle East, or there's so many factors that come into play with that. Let's go ahead and take a look at the second one, which is access. Promote universal access to fast and affordable networks. Sounds great in theory, but, I mean, it does come down to who's going to pay for this stuff and who's going to maintain it. I mean, I look at, let's have fast and affordable internet down in Africa where they're starving to death. That doesn't make much sense. It's a great thing, but come on, folks, let's build things up first. You've got to have a foundation before you can have something like this.
Yeah, it's just there's higher priorities in some places than internet. Like I know a lot of people in the first world, you know, first world problems, you know, can't conceive of, you know, what it's like to live in some of these places in Africa. But you know, like there was a world before the internet, and they need more help just, you know, having wells and clean water to drink and food to eat.
Absolutely. They bring up openness, keep the internet an open network where everyone is free to connect, communicate, write, read, watch, speak, listen, learn, create, and innovate. And to make this a little more realistic, let's have insult, degrade, bully, and flame. It goes back to the censorship thing. I mean, there's responsibilities that go along with a lot of these freedoms that they want. And if people can't handle it themselves, then
People can't handle their freedom. Like, you know, like we do have people, you know, or like you said, trolls, flamers, bullies, cyber bullies. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, there's just not that level of like, you know, it's not this altruistic, shiny, happy place all the time. There has to be restrictions on people who are going to be malicious and, you know, infect other people with viruses and, you know, bully them so that they kill themselves. You know, there just has to be consequences.
Let's look at the real world. I mean, a real world analogy of this would be the police. And no, I'm not talking about Sting. there are people who are going to do things where there has to be some sort of authority to do it. Now, I'm not talking about a totalitarian regime where they say exactly what you can and cannot do, but there has to be some sort of consequence. And it falls immediately as to the people who run the servers, who run the software, who run the sites. And beyond that, if they fail, then there has to be some sort of something beyond that.
The cyberbullying stuff is a good example. It's like they've got, you know, it's like on Facebook and stuff, there are these kids who are bullying other kids to the point of like suicide. And Facebook doesn't really do anything about it, but you know, you can pursue it sort of legally because it's cyberbullying is a thing.
Absolutely.
So,
at least here in the States, the legislation hasn't quite caught up to it yet. They don't know how to handle this stuff. So, I mean, it really does come down to the responsibilities that we have. These freedoms are great things, but there's always the balance there. But let's go ahead and go on to the next one, which is innovation. To protect the freedom to innovate and create without permission. Don't block new technologies and don't punish innovators for their users' actions. Good heavens. I mean, again, this sounds great, but is this advocating the theft of other people's technologies as the create without permission?
Or other people's creative properties? I mean, this is where that whole copyright thing starts to boil over. I mean, it's like comic scrapers, like that whole thing we had with that one app that was stealing all the comics from people's sites and putting them on mobile devices.
And making money off of other people's work.
Making money off of other people's work. It's like, that's all great that you've created this piece of technology, but you've gone and stepped on other people's freedom and rights and ability to make an income. And this is not cool. And it's not even like, you know, it's like, Even when I hate defending the, you know, the big studios and stuff, because I do think they do incredibly douchey things, but they're still their creative property. And if I want to, you know, respect the right, have people respect the rights for my creative property, I respect their rights to their creative property. And it's just not, you know, it's not cool to just rape their living, essentially, you know, just on the, you know, I've got to make this new technology, but I need content for it, so I'm just going to take whatever I want.
Yeah, or where they go through and, I mean, literally steal the other people's programs or piracy, not just of movies, but of the software itself. I mean,
yeah, code, like they're stealing up like other people's code.
So it's,
yeah,
bad responsibility.
Yeah, again,
they have privacy, protect privacy and defend everyone's ability to control how their data and devices are used. That sounds great, but again, now this comes down to personal responsibility. I mean, if you are so concerned about your privacy online, why are you on Facebook?
Yeah.
Why are you on Twitter letting people know exactly what's going on every freaking second? People who
are checking in all the time on Foursquare, or, you know, it's you're giving your privacy away. There's a lot people don't get to that. There's privacy agreements for a reason, and that, you know, you have to click on, like, there are some people who are collecting information rather, you know, that I guess would be kind of slightly underhanded, aka Facebook tracking people who aren't even members. But still, like, generally speaking, most of the time you're giving your information away in exchange for something.
Right. And not just, I mean, general information like address or phone number or social security card, but yeah, I mean, where you are and what you're doing. I mean, somebody could turn on a GPS tracker, which you have on, and find you. And in this age of stalking, I mean, It really is. It's a dangerous thing to do a lot of what's being done nowadays. And that also goes back to the cyberbullying we talked about, where you're giving personal information that can be used against you.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a friend who says that 20 years from now, we're going to have nobody running for president because all they have to do is look back as to what they did as a kid on Facebook, and there goes their career.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be one of those things where it's like, you know, it's only like somebody who lives in the middle of nowhere with who's never had internet access is going to be able to run for the presidency.
But let's go ahead and go on. We've got two stories here, which we covered in the oddities or the tidbits, which we want to kind of tie together. One is the Bizarro Classic Animation done by Rob Pratt. Now, robpratt.com. If you haven't seen it, I really go over there. The animation is magnificent. It's a beautiful, as I said, Fleischer-ish style, which is bringing back a lot of the original stuff, which both of us of the older generation grew up with. And even though it's a short, I mean, it's beautifully done, both in the animation style, in the short story that they have, in the way that it's done. One of the tricks that they used for it was when John Newton, the previous Superboy and now Superman, recorded the voice. He actually wrote out the dialogue backwards, recorded it, and then flipped the tape so that it had this weird sound to it, but it was completely legible.
Wow.
And also we have the story about the Homestuck fandom. Murray, I mean, you know more about the Homestuck fandom than I do. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there are very passionate fans, and there's a lot of them. Like MS Paint Adventures is an extremely well-read comic. Like it's amazing. The sheer amount of traffic that site gets is crazy. And you know, you go to any convention now, and you will see tons of Homestuck fans. There are clubs of them, you know, making their own, you know, their own get-togethers, their own photo shoots, their own, like, essentially, like, clubs. And they're pretty big clubs. Like, they have, like, you know, like, 100-plus members in many cities. And they get together and hang out. And they're an incredibly passionate, fashionable.
Well, they could be fashionable
group of people. I mean. Well, actually, a lot of them are quite fashionable. Well, a lot of them are cosplaying, but, yeah, they're very creative, incredibly creative. Like, their costumes are, you know, like, creative, and they're creative, and it's just, it's amazing how passionate they are about Homestuck.
Yeah, Ian, I mean, with USB Arts of the Watch, and the Watch has been, let's say, a long-running comic with a good, strong fandom and fan support. You've dealt with some of the fans. I mean, what's your opinion on the way that some of these fans and some of the creations? In fact, let me go ahead and back up a little bit, because you started off as doing fan art for Anonymous and Robin Erickson for The Watch, and just kind of made your way into doing your own comic, and now the artist for the watch. What's your opinion with some of the stuff that the fans do on these things?
I think it's the kind of thing that any creator must love to have, and any fan, that they want to show their passion. They want to show why they care about these characters and these worlds and these stories, and they kind of make it their own. There's no way that any creator can keep producing content constantly to the level of satisfaction for some of its viewers. And whenever they can, the fans will continue to do it on their own.
Yeah, I mean, we can point over to what are called Mary Sue stories or other beginner fans whose attempts at creation are, to be charitable, less than acceptable. Not because of content, but because of spelling errors or grammatical errors or just a bad story. But it does show the level of passion that they have for their objects of their fans. And it does improve. There are a lot of people who progressed from fan to active creator of their own stuff, and sometimes even active creator of what they were a fan of. Peter David, the famous comic book writer, big Star Trek fan, and eventually worked his way up into where he's writing was writing the Star Trek novels.
Yeah, that actually is a very good point, because there are a lot of people who are incredibly passionate about their fandom. They do a lot of fan art, fan writing, and they do eventually, sometimes they eventually get noticed, and they actually get picked up by the actual object of their fandom. Like, an example would be Nina Matsumoto, who is a local Vancouver artist who did the Simpsonaru. I don't know if you know that picture. It was passed around the internet. It's basically like the Simpsons cast in her own style. And it became incredibly popular, and it actually did reach Matt Groening, and she was offered an opportunity to do work for Boing Boing, which is their, I think it's their imprint, their comic imprint that they actually published, and she did,
I think it's Bongo Comics.
Or is it Bongo? Sorry, yeah. I keep thinking it's Boing Boing. It's Bongo Comics.
Is our
yeah, you're right.
Website, so.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not looking at it. I'm just trying to do it from memory. Sadly, my memory is not that good. But yeah, she did it for their comic, and then, you know, it went on to win, you know, an Eisner. So it was an incredible opportunity for her that resulted from a piece of fan art.
You know, passion is a great exercise. It's a great drive for anyone who wants to get into these kind of things or do these kind of things. And I went to a career fair convention. And one of them, they said that the people who get hired are the people who are already doing what they want to do. They might not be creating multi-million video games, but they're just spending time in their room creating their own things, which are reaching that level. And that passion helps them learn, grow, know what's right and wrong, and it just pushes them forward.
Exactly. I mean, the best way for a creation to be noticed is the people, how much fervor it draws up. Plus there's a lot of ego boost for the creators. I mean, if you're creating something and you get no responses and no feedback and nothing from the fans, it doesn't matter how many you are, you wonder, why are you doing this? But if you get even a small amount of people who are creating things based off of your creation, that says a lot about what you're doing. You stimulated that passion. We keep using that word, but it's the best one to use. The passion that they want to do something to honor what you have created. And more than that, they will oftentimes go off and do their own thing as well.
Many of them are already doing their own things. This is like they're people who are quite good at writing and drawing, who are fans of many things. Like that, you know, a fan can have many interests, and they do, and they tend to be passionate. It's like writers are also readers. Artists are also fans of art, you know, so they do tend to often have something else already going on, which is always very interesting to see. And, you know, it's got its other side, though. It's a bit of its dark side, though, I'd say, too, sometimes, in the sense of, like, sometimes they don't, there's not always a line to be drawn. It's very cool when it works, but you know, when people are selling this stuff, you have to watch, you know, sort of carefully sort of how you tread those waters.
Exactly. And for the vast majority of people who are fans of this type of thing, Kirk and Spock are not homosexual lovers. I don't care how much fan/fic you write for it. It's not going to happen. But it does go through and it shows, again, the way that people look at things. They want to interpret your creation in their own style. But where the line is drawn is something that's up for each individual creator. I know there are some people who do not like fan creations because they feel it taints their creation and their vision. And there are others who open it up for people to do and just absolutely bask and love seeing what these other people have created. Even the bad stuff shows that the people out there have some sort of level that they want to try and reach and how they look up to the creation to create something of their own.
Definitely.
And let's go ahead and look on the other side, the anti-creation. And that is our friend Charles Carrion. Oh, Lord.
Wow. Yeah. Like, wow, man. That's like, you just look at this guy, it's like it's train wreck every time you, more, the train wreck gets worse every time you look at it.
I've made the comparison to Jack Thompson, the now disbarred lawyer, and his lawsuits originally against the video game industry to his descent into insanity, where he was suing everybody, including the other lawyers, the judges, and the juries in some of his lawsuits because he didn't get what he wanted. This is just, I mean, as in our show notes, we've got a note here from Eric, or Jason, stating that Carrion was going to wait until, he basically held off his lawsuit because the victim of his attack now has a lawyer, so he's going to wait until that person no longer has a pro bono or free lawyer to represent him, which says, I want to make him spend money. And this is a very common tactic for things like this.
Yeah, they're just going to try to bleed the person for money they don't have because they probably don't have the resources to do to fight it. Although, I mean, in seeing this, the other lawyer might be like, well, you know what? Just call me when you get the summons.
Yeah, I mean, let's go ahead. Let's settle this out of court. Let's work something out. And it's so obvious from at least from this layperson's viewpoint that there really was no case that he's had all along.
Well, no. I mean, like, it's just been so ridiculous. Any judge who had half a brain would have thrown this out of court so fast, probably, and been like, you know, sir, you really need to just go get help. Because you need a lot of the professional variety.
Oh, boy. But we're definitely going to be keeping our eye on this one, because you know this is a story that isn't going to go away, no matter how much you want it to.
He just strikes me as the sort, too, probably, who probably just kind of, you know, as much as the attention has been negative, he just sort of, you know, this attention, he's got it now. You know, I bet you he's going to use it in some way.
Yeah, unfortunately. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and bring our news show to a close early today. This is a hectic 2 weeks. I mean, I know Jason and Eric and others are out at conventions today, and next week is San Diego Comic-Con, where your local host, your happy host, me, will be doing the show on the road from there at Comic-Con.
Ooh.
Shiny. Oh boy, this is going to be a heck of a week. So if you're in San Diego, give us a ring, look us up, send us an email, something, let us know, and we'll try to hook up with you at some point. But on behalf of all of us, I want to thank Marie for joining us again. You can see her site over at, what is that, Marie?
EvilSpaceCat.com.
And, of course, my good friend Ian Sampson here. Ian, and what are the comics that you're doing?
City of Reality and The Watch.
Which you can find at cityofreality.com and The Watch, thewotch.com. Still written by Anonymous and colored by Robin Erickson as well. Give a shout out to our friends over there. And that leaves me. I'm Thomas Revoir, your host, here from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And we will see you all in the funny papers.